I started quietly building a website and I started working on my branding. And then they made that decision for me because I was part of a giant layoff, which honestly was a blessing in disguise because I was prepping to leave.
Yeah, you just got kicked out of the nest by Mama Bird. She's like, you can fly, go ahead.
Exactly. It was the kick I needed because I probably would have stayed far too long had I not gotten the kick, because I would have been like, oh, I'll feel safe enough if I have one more client or maybe one more client past that. And I needed to bet on myself. And that's what I've done. And it's been really, really wonderful.
Connecting the dots with the Renaissance people.
Hello, Renaissance people and folks who would like to cultivate a Renaissance mindset. My name is Sarah Kobilka, and I am the Renaissance Woman, your host for this show, where I bring on all sorts of fabulous Renaissance people, where they can inspire us and really show us what it's like to live this Renaissance lifestyle. Summertime and the living is easy, except for it's not easy because summertime gets really busy for me. I've got a couple of kids. We're in New York and our school goes until the end of June. And then we travel usually right at the beginning of July to see family. So it's been chaotic and I've given myself a little bit of permission, which is something we Renaissance people need to do from time to time. Permission to slow down one project so that we can focus energy on some other projects and some other things that need to get done. Because if we splatter our energy in all directions, we really don't have that power, that force, that impact that we want to have. So I did a little bit of strategic focus, which meant I took 1 week off of releasing a podcast. We'll see if my next episode comes out in 2 weeks or maybe 4 weeks from now. But I got 2 weeks of travel and I have two other large audio projects that I have to work on in the next couple of weeks. So we shall see what is happening. And I hope to share a little bit more about those audio projects in the future because they're kind of fun. I do want to share some other things that are going to be happening in the meantime. So coming up this August, and depending on when you're listening to this, we're talking August 2026, I'm going to have some spaces open in my Find Your Golden Thread sessions. So if you are a Renaissance person who really dreads that question, so what do you do? You don't know how to answer it. You want to give a 30-minute speech, but you know that's not the right thing. I'm here to help. We can sit, I can be your thought partner, we can talk through some of these ideas, and whether it's updating your LinkedIn profile or preparing to do some networking or even a job interview, I'm here to help. You can sign up for those sessions starting in August. And that is also the month where I am very excited to be kicking off the first Fertile Grounds. So Fertile Grounds is going to become a monthly virtual gathering of the Renaissance People community. It's a place for us to play with ideas and pollinate possibilities. Ooh, look at that alliteration. So you can come and join with your fellow multi-passionates where you can get some help and an outside perspective on a challenge that maybe you're facing. You can find a collaborator to grow a new project. Because as people have been signing up for my newsletter, which if you haven't already, I recommend doing it. But if you sign up for the newsletter, you can fill out this form to tell me a little bit more about yourself. And I know that finding ways to collaborate with fellow people in this community is something that a lot of you are interested in. So that'll be part of what we do. And then going with our little gardening theme, you can supplement the soil by contributing resources from your unique experiences. Because as we've said on previous episodes, sharing resources is like the love language of many of us Renaissance people. And finally, just a place to exercise your creativity where you're not too much. You're not getting looks from people like, whoa, slow down, you're overwhelming me. We can take it. We're Renaissance people. So sign up. You can learn a little bit more and you get to join your first meeting for free because I firmly believe that you got to give people a chance to try things out before expecting them to pay any sort of money for them, right? Okay, so let's talk about what's going on in today's episode of Connecting the Dots with the Renaissance People. So I have a fellow podcaster with a varied experience, a Renaissance person type of background, and her name is Casey Brown. And of course, when you put two people who are podcasters together, what do you think happens? Technology, right? Of course you have to have audio problems. My audio in particular is less than spectacular, but oh well, you'll listen, right? Hopefully. In this episode, we're going to talk about Casey's journey from the beef industry to podcasting and marketing, the scary leap that she took into entrepreneurship, who her ideal client is, and just a hint, she sees it in the mirror at her house and I see it in the mirror at my very own house. We talk about how podcasting actually aligns with that Renaissance person trait of being a lifelong learner and how you can use podcasting as a source of connection, a kind of circle of trust that I really love how she describes it. And she gives all sorts of great advice if you're someone who's also interested in starting your own podcast. So while the show notes may not have quite as much as usual, there is so much to hear on this episode that I think you're going to really, really love it. And in fact, at the very end, she drops a bombshell. And because it took 2 weeks to release this, the bombshell was no longer a bombshell, which is that she has her own podcast that just started. And so you can actually listen to even more spectacular advice from Casey Brown on her own podcast. We also got into a few other tangents because tangents are the most interesting place to go because that's where the creativity happens. And in our case, we talked about Casey's ag journalism experience and the impact of role models on her, as well as language in the agricultural realm and how it is and isn't changing. And finally, she threw out a term that I'd never heard before and I'm kind of in love with and I need to be doing a little bit more of it. We're going to learn what strategic confetti is. So if you're not already curious, you should be at this point in time. Here we go.
Okay, we are started and we are going to do what I always do, which is jump head first, diving on in into my favorite first question, which I actually use to help myself think about what I was going to say in the podcast episode that will actually come out tomorrow at the time we're recording, but everyone else will be able to listen to it, which is your identity. So I'd like to know, Casey, which of these terms aligns best with your own personal identity? Renaissance person, like Renaissance man, woman, a multi-passionate, generalist, versatilist, Jack, Jill, J, non-binary term of all trades, boundary spanner, polymath, I've added that in, or something else.
I would say multi-passionate probably fits the best. It's because it's so easy to be interested in so many things, and I feel like that fits how I feel about it the best.
Love it, and you are following a trend. More than 50% of my guests have chosen multi-passionate.
Nice.
Which I actually talk about in the episode. Some people see passionate as like a bad thing, but I think as Renaissance people, we don't look down on the word. We don't think somebody who's passionate is like overwhelming or too much. We're like, yes, let's dive in. Let's go for it.
Absolutely.
So I love that you're okay with that.
Yeah. Even since elementary school, like I would get really interested in something and then like go in a huge deep dive. So like when I got interested in reading The Wizard of Oz, like I read all 14 of the books and then I got really into the musical and the movie and all of the things. And like, same thing with Titanic. And like, you just go through these giant deep dives. And yeah, I'm okay with that because it's super interesting and fascinating. And it's way more fun to follow those instead of worrying about whether it's acceptable.
Yeah. My deep dives were the Salem witch trials, got really into that. The Holocaust, read a ton of books as a like 12-year-old about the Holocaust. And what was another one? Oh, duck-billed platypus. When we had to pick what animal you were going to do your project on, I'm like, I'm not doing something boring like a lion, a tiger, or a leopard. I want to do like the weirdest animal known to mankind, I feel like.
Exactly.
It's so messed up and it's so wonderful. So, yay. Well, wonderful, multi-passionate Casey Brown. Delighted to have you on the show finally. We've been talking about this for a little bit. And she's also a fellow podcaster, which I'm very excited to hope that maybe you have an announcement that you can make on my show about something coming in your future. But I've said a few things about your areas of expertise, but why don't you kind of explain yourself a little bit more? Casey Brown, what are some of your areas of expertise or maybe where you're a known quantity?
Yeah. So right now I own Teal Hat Communications, which is a podcasting and marketing business for creative small business owners. This is an iteration of many of the things that have spanned my career so far. But it really is a really lovely way to combine a lot of my interests, I found, because I got into podcasting when I was a journalist for a beef breed association. I grew up on a farm, love the beef industry, love cattle, love all the science behind it, like genetics and nutrition and animal welfare and pasture management, all of that. There's so much science in agriculture. But I also really love the written word and story. storytelling and using that kind of my brain of words make sense to me. And so I really loved getting to explain really technical scientific stuff in ways that like my dad would use. So making sure that cattlemen could use this really technical information. And so that is why I started in journalism. I started at a beef breed magazine. But as journalism has evolved, we had to do digital. We had to do, I got voluntold to do a podcast. That's where this story is going.
Nice.
Of the editorial team, I was the youngest on, we had two major publications. I was the youngest on the commercial side. And so it just kind of fell to me to figure out how to do a podcast. And it also worked out because I have always been a musical person. I started playing piano when I was 4, was in the band, was in the choir, love musical theater. And so hearing things, being on stage, being on a mic has always interested me. And so being on the mic didn't intimidate me like some of the other editorial folks. They were much more comfortable with the byline being behind the scenes, essentially. So that started my podcasting journey. That was late 2021. And yeah, at that point, I even hated podcasts. If I was going to listen to anything, I wanted to listen to music. I like that like songs tell a whole story in three to five minutes. And I like the succinctness of that. But then as I dove into it, I realized that it combined two of my favorite things about my job, which was talking to cattlemen or researchers or extension agents and really learning about what makes this exciting, what makes this usable. And then the musical side of it on the audio editing side of how do I take out the things that are detracting from the story, from the practical bits? And how do I hear that? How do we make sure the levels are correct? How do I fade out the music? And I learned that that's called ducking. How do you make it sound like a cohesive, polished piece of information? And I really loved that I got to combine both sides of my interests with podcasting. And so that was really, really fun. But eventually I left that magazine and I went to a marketing agency, but kept the podcast editing on the side. And so the marketing agency taught me a lot. One, that journalism skills can be paid.
What do you know?
Right? Other places will pay more for this kind of skill set. But then also just like the foundations of brand awareness and education content. And I mean, the funnel, it feels kind of gross to talk about the marketing funnel, but I mean, it's solid foundational things about inviting people into what you offer. So did that for probably 2 years and then decided, it hit me one night as I was editing a podcast on the side of like, I make 3 times more per hour doing this than I do in my job with a client who is slowly killing me right now. And I was like, what if I did more of this? What if I tried to do this on my own? And so I started quietly building a website and I started working on my branding. And then they made that decision for me because I was part of a giant layoff, which honestly was a blessing in disguise because yeah. I was prepping to leave.
Yeah. You just got kicked out of the nest by yeah. Mama Bird. She's like, you fly, go ahead.
Exactly. It was the kick I needed because I probably would have stayed far too long had I not gotten the kick because I would have been like, oh, I'll feel safe enough if I have one more client or maybe one more client past that. And I needed to bet on myself. And that's what I've done. And it's been really, really wonderful. And I mean, I have 2 kids. So now by owning my own business, I get to craft my workday around being their taxi because the bus doesn't come out to our house. And it just really lets me pick the things that I am really good at and really gets to dive into those. And it helps me meet so many wonderful people like you and actually several other of your guests, that kind of coaching group referral. But getting to meet all these really cool, creative, entrepreneurial people is really fun. And so that is a long way to talk about. Now I help small business owners streamline their marketing efforts by centering on a podcast. So I help my clients trust their voice. And then we use that voice to earn trust. But we get to do it strategically. We figure out how best to repurpose all this long form gold that you create with your voice to make sure that it reaches the people that you are trying to reach in a way that they are ready to consume it, right? So maybe not everybody has the time to listen to a full episode, but maybe that means we write a recap article on your website so they can get the good value from it, but they can read it. They're still coming to your website. They're still coming to you. Or we figure out how to like really induce that curiosity in a newsletter, because I can't tell you how many times I have been reminded to listen to something from a newsletter. So solid strategy there. But you ask the good questions and so you really spark that curiosity there. They're very different styles of writing, which is pretty fun, but it's all based on what you have said. It is not AI slop. It is from your heart. It is from your voice. And it is really, really, really juicy and beautiful. And so that's what I help small business owners do. Or if you don't hate social media, we can do small clips so people can find you there. So it's all about meeting your listeners where they are and kind of inviting them in to all of your goodness.
And I loved how, like an amazing podcast guest, not only did you answer my second question, but you simultaneously answered my third question of where do you connect the dots? Because this is such a beautiful example of you having skills and having knowledge in different areas and using those Renaissance people pattern recognition skills of saying, wait a minute. Yeah, funnel feels nasty to people who are maybe entrepreneurial, free creative minds, but the concept of it makes sense.
Yeah.
And I can transfer that information, I can share that information and translate it into such a way that my clients can understand the value of it. And I can also think like a farmer, think like an audience member that you might not traditionally think of when you're saying like, say, podcasts. But
right.
Think about like, how do you talk to these people? And I love how you've had that experience talking to different audiences, because I think like a lot of the traditional journalists are thinking about like either quote the general public, which doesn't exist.
Right.
Or they're thinking about people who watch TV or people who read a magazine or still have a newspaper subscription. But you're thinking about a very, I hate to say it, but niche, because I'm anti-niche, but there is also focus when you know who you're trying to reach out to. And you can be so much more strategic in your messaging if you know who you're trying to talk to.
Yeah, I realized maybe not very early on. It was definitely help with Jenny Gritters, who is already on your podcast. But really, my ideal client is me. Like, I am my client, which helps have a lot of insights of where do I find information, where my friends finding information. And that really helps. And I realize, like, as you mentioned, the topics of my podcast's clients that I edit and help, they're all very wildly different. Like, one of them, it's my cattle breed association. So we're still talking about breeding philosophies. We're talking about expected progeny differences. We're talking about maximums versus optimums and like environmental fits for their cattle. And I love geeking out about that too. But then on the other side, I'm learning about one of my other clients owns a kitchen retail store. And I am learning so much about like what goes into actually making high quality kitchen knives, or what goes into like solving problems of like a high quality pepper grinder, and like how they made it so that it could be used with one hand. Everybody has such cool stories. And I really love that, especially as a Renaissance person. Like, yes, I'm doing the same thing. I am editing their audio and I am repurposing their content, but I get to learn so many cool things, or I get to listen about it. Like one of my last cattle episodes, they were talking to a breeder in Mississippi, and she was talking about how she was going to go alligator hunting the next weekend.
Yes.
And so I learned that it takes 2 7-foot alligators to make a pair of boots. And I have a pair of boots that are caimans. And I was like, now I know. It took 2 alligators to do that.
I wish I had the NBC, like, dun, 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 dun. When I worked at the NBC TV station, we did have a mini xylophone, so you could play The More You Know sound.
Oh, that's awesome.
I kind of wish I had that xylophone in my house, because that is. It's like the Renaissance person excitement of learning something new and interesting and different. And I think it was my brother who said this, that when you meet a fellow Renaissance person or somebody who's passionate about something, as a Renaissance person, you can get passionate about it too, just because they're passionately talking about it. Like, you feel that energy and you are happy to go with them, and they can throw out some big words and maybe you'll ask a question if you don't know what their jargon is, but you're happy to like go down that rabbit hole with them. And I think people appreciate us for that reason, because in a way we're good listeners, which is what you have to be a good journalist, is you have to be able to listen to the story, think about where other people might get confused by the story, mm-hmm. and be willing to like bring that up and ask clarifying questions and that sort of thing. But if you're not really willing to go down rabbit holes with other people, I don't think you're going to make it in the field of journalism,
right?
Or being a marketer for someone other than your own company.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head of it makes you a very good listener. Because you also know, like, I know I have a terrible habit, or I did, I've worked on it quite a bit, of interrupting people because I get so excited and I want to be like, oh yeah, I know that too. Or like, I'm trying to interact with them. I also realized later of like, that seems really rude and I'm not trying to be.
Yes.
So honed that in a little bit. But because you hear the excitement in their voice, that's another thing I love about podcasting, is that you get to feel the excitement along with them. And I think because their excitement is so contagious, because they are interested in so many things, that just levels up everything else. And so that experience, enthusiasm is contagious. And I think people who are really interested in a lot of things, they get joy from so many things because that enthusiasm just kind of bubbles up and over. And I think that's probably my favorite part about podcasting, is because you get to hear that and you get to sense it. And even though it's like a one-way connection with your listeners, you're still getting to share that bit of you. And then when they have listened and then they decide, hey, I want to work with her because you know what? I feel like we're kindred spirits. It's done its job. And that's really cool. And then once you do talk, you've already kind of got that connection and you get to like vibe off of that, I guess.
Yeah, that's how I found Jenny Gritters. Was I found her podcast first and then connected with her. And I just realized that I think another bonus of that is that the person who has been the listener gets to connect with you and feel like they already know you, which means that you as the podcast host get to focus your energy just on getting to know them. And how great does it feel when somebody is not trying to tell you all about themselves, but instead is just curious about you and wants to learn about you?
Oh, yeah.
So it kind of like bypasses the need to be like, hi, I'm Sarah Kowilka, Renaissance woman. Now I'm going to talk for 45 minutes about who I am and what I do. Oh, sorry. Did you walk away? Never mind. Have a good day. And instead it's, you know what? There's a number of different episodes you can listen to learn all about me. And now that we're together, tell me about you. Because mm-hmm. obviously, if you thought I was interesting, you must be really interesting too. So let's yeah. learn about you.
Yeah. And I feel like so many people, especially like with all the digital stuff, people want to be known, they want to be seen, they want to be heard. And I think that's a really great point of like, they've already kind of met you. And so that first call is this really beautiful experience of, well, now I want to learn about you too. Because again, that's part of the renaissance of like, this is fascinating, tell me more. I want to know about you. And I think that's really cool.
I have a question. No, two questions that came up. First one is, so as you probably know, my background is broadcast journalism. I specifically majored in broadcast journalism because I much prefer talking over writing. I can do writing. I had to write scripts. I did all of that, but I went the broadcast route. Did you ever consider broadcast journalism, or when you were looking at school, were you really focused on studying to be a print or some sort of written word journalist?
That is a great question. So I will say I probably didn't think about broadcast journalism as an option because I went into school thinking, as many ag kids do, that I want to help teach consumers about ag because growing up, and I mean, just in general, it feels like ag is a very misunderstood industry. And so I wanted to increase agricultural literacy with the world.
To change the world.
Right. How I was going to do that, I really didn't have any like solid strategy for that one, but I went in with that goal. And so I was thinking like maybe PR, maybe I just didn't know what I didn't know. Right. And so I went into ag communications and journalism thinking like, this is what I want to do. I want to use my words and I want to disseminate information basically. But then as I got into it, I started in ag leadership. Again, the I don't know what I'm going to do with this yet, but I like leadership. That's cool. Let's learn about that.
It's fun.
And so then all my favorite electives were my ag comm classes. And so I was like, okay, because this was why I didn't. I just remembered. I was scared of writing. I didn't want to be a writer. And so that's so funny because then
the irony.
I spent 11 years as an editor. I didn't want to write because I hated high school research paper writing. And journalism writing is very different than research paper writing. But I hadn't really learned to disconnect the two. And so my favorite classes were my ag comm classes. I took ag publications 101, basically, and fell in love with that. I was like, I could be in charge of getting to decide what goes in a magazine. That's really cool. And so I kind of went down that road. And so like at age 19, I decided I've always been a goal getter, very much a high achiever, as most of us are. But I decided at 19, I'm going to be a managing editor of a cattle beef breed association. And I did, which was cool. But
that's Renaissance person getting what they want.
Right.
Like, I set my goals. We're doing it.
We're doing it. Yeah. It took a long time. It did not look like anything like I thought it would. But just I liked that the style of writing in a magazine, you still get to have your voice. Like it didn't have to be so black and white and sterile.
Newspaper, typical newspaper style. Yeah,
absolutely. So I think part of it was just maybe a convenience thing of like, this feels good. I'm just going to keep going there. And I have always loved being on stage, so I'm kind of surprised I didn't look at broadcast, but there are just far fewer like ag broadcast options.
Yeah, I was going to say the role model thing would be huge. I had a friend, so at the University of Missouri where I did journalism school, you picked which category you were going to go into, but there was, I don't know if it was a minor or exactly what it was called, but there was an agricultural journalism option at the school. And I believe only one person in broadcast journalism was also part of this agricultural journalism program, Jacob Schellenberger, who ended up being one of my really good friends from journalism school. And this was in Columbia, Missouri. So he was a person who had grown up on a farm. And I think he shared a lot of your interests in recognizing that agriculture is so important, particularly in the Midwest. But just honestly, for all of us, we should know more about where our food comes from and all that sort of stuff. But he was really dedicated to making sure that stories on TV were being told about it. But I imagine he probably didn't have that many role models. And we know the importance of role models, particularly for girls. And this is from the Girls in STEM efforts that I've been part of. And we know that girls in particular are less likely to see something as an option if they haven't seen a female role model or somebody who seems similar enough to them actually doing that as a career.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I think about like RFD TV, it's Ranch and Farm Development TV, maybe. Maybe cut that out.
But we'll look it up and put it in the show notes. Take a drink of water or whatever you want, because you're sharing resources like a good Renaissance person. Yeah.
So RFD TV is an ag-only like news station. It's on cable and Sirius and all of that. So that was an option. But again, that's like one, or a lot of local news options, especially in the Midwest, would have some ag coverage, obviously. And I grew up in Indiana on a small farm, but it was just, I don't know, it was just never really, like you said, something I saw and aspired to. But I did grow up with beef breed magazines everywhere in our house.
Like, okay.
I have a very distinct, very vivid memory of, I think I was 4 and I was sitting on dad's lap and we were looking through a Simtok, which is the Simmental breed. And there was one advertisement, I'm pretty sure. And I knew the names of all of those bulls and I could tell you which one was which. And so like we flipped through magazines together a lot. And so it was definitely dad finds value in this. This is something that I have seen. This is something I enjoyed reading.
Yeah.
And so it was, yeah, I think it was definitely a role model kind of deal of, yeah, this is a really cool option. I think I want to pursue that one.
I was one of those examples of broadcast people telling a little bit of an agriculture story. And I think I told you this one time when we were virtually meeting, but I used to record basically the, what is it, Cheesemaker Association, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
They would create news stories and send them out to the TV stations. But then the TV stations would have somebody locally record the audio for it.
Oh, cool.
And so I was the voiceover person for all these cheese association stories when I was working at a TV station in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Oh, cool.
And so I got to learn all about the like the science of cheese making.
Nice.
It was fun. It was really interesting. And we certainly had agricultural stories at all the stations I worked at, including in Iowa. But that's such a small percentage, I think, of the stories that you see. So not surprising that kind of there's that that lack of role models, or just, you know, your family didn't sit down to watch the local news just to see the story about agriculture. If you sat down to watch the local news, it was most likely to get like the weather forecast or the sports team, that's something like that.
Yeah, that was one of the beautiful things about trade media. Like, if you want the deep dive, you go to those publications. And I realized at the beginning I wanted to do consumer facing things, I thought. But then as I dug in, like, I really liked providing information that would keep cattlemen in business. So I went inward facing instead. And I think that's really what happens to a lot of folks who study ag communications. There's plenty, like, and we talked about earlier, like knowing your audience, there's plenty of opportunities within the ag industry to use your communication skills, because there's lots of information to move out.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, being able to communicate to that audience, it really helps to have that background. Actually, from both the publication and both marketing agencies I worked at, so many of us were like, I craft this communication in a way that my dad would use, or that my grandpa would find helpful, or that my cousins would use. And so it was very much a keeping your audience top of mind kind of deal. And so that, I think that's something I took very much, and that I use now still, of what does my audience need? What is the what's in it for me right away? And that has been a really good guidepost for most of the communication or marketing or writing anything or podcast scripting. That is really, really helpful.
So that reminded me of what my second question was, because I lost it for a second.
Sorry.
Like, oh, no. But I got it back.
Nice.
So as I mentioned, I've been involved in diversity in STEM. And some people like to say STEAM, and some people like to have the A in STEAM rather than art be agriculture.
Ooh.
And some people also do two M's and make it about medicine and put an R in there and make it stream for reading. Alphabet soup, as Jess Rowell and I talked about in our episode. But anyways, I noticed the language a lot of times around agriculture being highly male.
Mm-hmm.
We say cattle man, as opposed to a transition to like cattle person versus like firemen versus firefighters has been kind of a move that some have made. Do you feel like that industry is having that kind of a shift to thinking about female audiences more and women working in agriculture, or even just like more diversity in who is a farmer who works in agriculture? We're seeing some more of that just broadly across agriculture, but what do you see in the specific area that you're focused?
Yeah, that is a great question. And I distinctly remember having this discussion with my editor many, many years ago of like, do we say cattlemen? Do we say cattlemen and women? Do we say ranchers? Just leave it at that. So there's zero gender involved. And yeah, it's very difficult to be able to include all of that correctly and still have like the community experience. So we used to just say cattle producer. And so that was a gender neutral kind of deal. And then kind of got some feedback that it just didn't really inspire that like community aspect. And so like people identified as being a cattleman or a cowboy, or not necessarily a cowboy. Like you kind of think of that as pen riders maybe, but not necessarily the owners and the managers.
Okay.
So yeah, it's so interesting. I don't know if I have a solid answer to this, but I do know last I heard that women owners of operations is growing exponentially, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's up to like maybe 33%, which is still...
Wow.
I think. I'd have to go dig into some numbers, but that's really cool. I really love that. And so even on the marketing side, it was really cool to see like we need to incorporate more pictures of women executing these things, because absolutely they're doing that.
And they've always been there. They just haven't been the big names
exactly
being recognized too, because it's a family affair when you work on a farm. You don't get to just dad and the boys do all the work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a big thing of I didn't have any brothers. And so there was no excuse of like, you were going to be strong because you're going to do these things. And I still very much pride myself in that.
The cows don't feed themselves, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Except for when they eat grass. But, you know, that's separate.
True story. But yeah, so I would say the wording probably is slower to catch up, maybe. With on the crop side, which I don't know as much about the crop side, but I know like you give farmers and growers. So that's definitely less gender specific. Yeah, even on other livestock species. So I worked with the swine industry for a while too. I've got a swine animal health company that I work with, and I love getting to nerd out about like water medications.
Sounds fun.
Right. It's like swine integrators. So I think, yeah, I'd probably say the trend is going away from gender-specific wording. Cattlemen, I could see being one of like the last holdouts, because that I feel like is very much an identity. Because I know several organizations that are like the
Cattlemen's Association.
Cattlemen's Association. There are Cattlewomen's Association subsets of them.
Yeah. But that's like saying, and today we have the sports and the women's sports.
Exactly.
And it's like, hold on now.
Don't love that.
Yeah.
Right.
Not so much a fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would say we're moving in the right direction. Ag generally tends to be a little bit slower on the social aspects potentially, but it's moving. I think it's moving in the right direction.
I used to have people who thought they were funny be like, oh, you're the weather girl. And I was like, do you call them weather boys? And they'd be like, no. And I'm like, well, maybe don't use that term. And some would be like, well, what do I call you? And I'm like, well, there's a thing called a meteorologist. You could, you know, that term if you wanted to, but right. Whatever. You can also call me a weather goddess and I'll take that.
I love that. Yes, please.
We were live at some of the schools. And I'll throw a link in the show notes to a picture of me showing a bunch of kids how to make a tornado with like the tubes and that little connector.
Oh, nice.
But it's actually not a tornado. It's a vortex, but I digress. But we would be live at the schools and I was jokingly telling, I think it was the art teacher about this. And she's like, you're the weather goddess? Okay. And then she comes back like 2 hours later and she's made me this whole picture of myself, the weather goddess. And I still have it. I have to dig it up downstairs. But I was like, yes. I shall embrace that.
Yes, that's amazing.
I'm not the weather girl. I'm the weather goddess.
Yes, please.
And you get to talk to a lot of people in agriculture because they do care a lot about the weather.
Absolutely.
We have a lot of good relationships with them.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you, I think you've worked a lot on trying to explain yourself. You're multifaceted. You have this whole background. You've got this kind of winding portfolio career. Right now, how do you explain yourself when you meet somebody brand new and you've got a really short time period? How do you introduce yourself without overwhelming them? And how do you feel when they ask you that dreaded question of, so what do you do?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a great question. I've really been working on this the last couple months, so I feel like I've been practicing for this.
Okay, this is your chance.
Okay.
Here's the task. So, Casey, okay. What do you do?
So, I say that I am a... See, I don't know if I'm really ready.
That's exactly what I do, too.
I usually start with what I do or how I help people, because that is like two of my guiding values are kindness and connection. And so I feel like using that is to help people. So usually my elevator pitch now is... I help creative small business owners streamline their marketing efforts, and trust their voice through a podcast-centered approach. What I do in business is exactly what I myself need to do, right?
Yep. We teach what we struggled with.
Exactly. So yep. Trusting your voice, trusting in your own expertise, in your own story, in your own capabilities and worthiness and nice light things, right? But trusting in your competency, even though everyone I work with and everyone I have met through these kind of organizations are wildly capable. It's just the belief in themselves with that. And so it's the underlying shame and vulnerability and like all those emotional triggers that are way harder to dig into. Like, I love Brené Brown's work, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I help people with that. And by doing that, we learn to trust our voice, and then we use our voice to earn trust. And that is through podcasting. So again, like we mentioned, like creating that one-way connection. So when someone really does resonate with you, then you get to create that connection the other way, because...
Full circle.
Exactly. So a lot of kind of starting to build a community around that.
Do you find yourself frequently saying, if you need it, here's the permission slip to ...
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. With most of my clients, like I have a framework, and I think people get really like rigid around frameworks. It is not that at all. It is mostly of, here are pieces that have been known to work. So here's what works, very broad. How do we tailor this to what makes sense for you and your business? So I have a framework. It's called the 4 P's. So it's purpose, production, promotion, and partnerships. And so within this framework, like I said, it's pretty broad, but like purpose is, how do we set up that foundation for your podcast? How will this support you? How will this support your business? So it's not just an expensive content hobby, right? Nope. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Are you talking to me right now? Since I've told you all about my podcast and how it's not making money yet, but I hope.
Yeah, but we're getting
there.
I'm
the type of person. Yeah. Because I'm looking at it as a long game. You talk kind of a lot about that, I would imagine, because it is. It's something you build over time. Just like trust is not something you just get simultaneously.
Exactly.
You got to prove that you deserve that trust that people give you.
Absolutely. And part of it is believing that you have earned the trust or that you deserve the trust. And so knowing that, yes, we're building trust over the long game, but also knowing that me repeating my calls to action, so my major call to action is book a mic check call with me, which is like a free 30-minute, we talk about your show and I give you like 1 to 2 solid strategy pieces, whether you have a show or you're thinking about it. So that's my discovery call, basically. I have to trust that that has enough value that I can repeat it all the time. I can talk about this and I feel good about that. Like, I have to know that I'm not bugging people when I talk about it a lot. And
that's
so
hard.
Yeah.
Because you have to say it so many times and they're going to only see it or hear it a small portion of the number of times that you feel like you're saying it.
Exactly.
And you are saying it.
Right. And you have to move your call to action up. It's not pushy if you talk about it early. It's okay.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, you and I have talked about this. It's
You gave me that great advice and I appreciated it and put it right into effect with my own show. So I'm somebody who can vouch that just chatting with Casey and the advice that she gave me, I was like, okay, I won't save it for the very end and put it at the very bottom of my show notes. Like,
right.
Let's just say it at the top. Hey, let's find your golden thread and work with me and let's do it together.
Exactly. But that's the trusting your voice of I'm not bothering people. This is valuable. I am good to work with.
I'm a good person.
Yes.
People like me.
Exactly.
You know that commercial?
Yes. I love that one.
I'll put a link in the show notes. You can find it on YouTube because I've actually posted about it before.
That's awesome.
The SNL skit. Al Franken is actually one involved with it. Who has a weird second degree connection to me because the best man at our wedding, his parents were Al's literary agent. And so he knew Al pretty well. And Al was over at his house sometimes. And Al would call and like leave voicemail messages like, hey, Ross, happy birthday.
That's awesome.
So Al Franken was one, second degree, third degree connection.
I love that.
That's great.
That's so cool.
Little tangent.
Love it.
Tangent. Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of those. Like within a framework, you can really be so creative within that. Like it's just guidelines of here's what we know to work. How can we be as explorative and creative as possible within that, which is really fun. So yeah, that's how I help my people. We trust our voice. We use our voice to earn trust.
That, and I literally can see that as like a visual spiraling loop that I think is wonderful. And the idea of spirals and full circle has come up in 2 podcasts, one with Alicia, who you might know through Jenny Gritters, and another one with Jess Rowell, who's the science teacher. So
I love that.
Circles, spirals,
I love it.
Cycles, science, dance, steam, everything.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's do our fill in the blank challenge. And as I always do with this one, I only let myself come up with the idea in the moment because it wouldn't be improv if I did it ahead of time.
All right.
So it is going to be completing the sentence, you know you're a Renaissance person if. And I'll go first. So you know you're a Renaissance person if somebody asks you, how did you make that jump again?
Wait, like that.
Like, wait, why did you do that?
Yes. You know you're a Renaissance person if you talk about your other interest in the wrong setting. I say this because at a musical friend's wedding, I ended up talking about pasture management and how legumes put nitrogen back in the soil.
That's why they do crop rotation between soybeans and corn.
Exactly.
I can talk about that. Heck yeah, I lived in Iowa.
But I was very much talking to a very artsy person. And then usually at cattle industry events, I would talk about my community theater and like getting to play Mary Poppins. So transitioning, making the switch.
That's so much truth. Okay, I've got another one. I'm going to make you do another one too, so you can start thinking now. Okay. You know you're a Renaissance person if you get the book for your child that's called My Mouth is a Volcano, about a child who listens to other people, gets really excited, and then explodes with ideas and interrupts people. If that really speaks to you and you're like, was this book written for children or was it written for me?
Yeah, that's exactly what I had been working on for years of just be quiet and listen.
And at least with a podcast, you kind of have to do it so you don't have to edit out all of these interrupting voices. So it like almost forces you to.
Right. Yeah. I used to tell my podcast guests at my first podcast, I'm going to grin like a lunatic at you. So I have silence. Like normally I'd say like, oh, yeah, that's really cool. Tell me more. I'd be like, I'm going to grin. And I'm going to nod and I'm going to be quiet.
I will be biting my tongue and it will be bleeding in my mouth, but right. I will shut up.
Yes. And that was so hard. Oh, that's a good one. So you know you're a Renaissance person if you make yourself hold your fingers and like cross your fingers to remember something because you're really trying hard not to interrupt someone. But then you get too many crosses.
You don't have enough digits to yes. continue the crossing process. I yes. like that. Maybe that'll be part of our rapid-ish fire first question since we're limited on time. But what's one metaphor as we transition? What's one metaphor that you find yourself using frequently?
Does strategic confetti count?
Don't know what that is, but I like it.
Oh, perfect. Okay, yes.
Celebration, confetti.
Yeah, that is my repurposing, basically, for my clients. Of we get the long form content and then I create strategic confetti where we repurpose the long form into short form in the way that our audience needs it to find it. So
it's like a paper shredder.
Basically.
You take your whole long thing, you use the paper shredder, you cut it up into small pieces and you throw it everywhere.
Yes.
I love it. And I need to do more of that, too.
Nice. I adore confetti and sparkles and sequins. And it just makes me really happy to think about it as strategic confetti.
You must be a fan of Pride events, too, then, because they are so sparkly.
Yeah.
I'm currently helping my daughter. She decided she wanted to sew a butterfly wing with a rainbow fabric. So that is our next project that we're going to do in 3 days' time. We'll see how that one goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me, what's one rabbit hole that you've gone down recently?
Ooh, I have many of them. So picking one is hard. I guess, can I drop my bombshell? Because this was my rabbit hole that I've been really working at. It's not a bombshell.
Yes, please. Please tell me.
So I've laughed at myself for many, many months because I'm a podcast producer who doesn't have her own podcast. It's very much like the cobblers whose children don't have shoes. So I have finally released my trailer. My show is real. It is out in the world. It's called Kindly Confident Marketing. It is on all the major platforms now. The trailer is out. I've scripted out my first two episodes for the launch, and I just need to record them and produce them. So that's my rabbit hole, is actually making myself use what I teach and do my own podcast.
I'm so excited. I cannot wait to listen to it. And if you ever need a guest to come on, let me know.
Absolutely.
I will raise my hand and volunteer. And hopefully we won't have tech problems. Because, you know, you put two podcasters together and you immediately have tech problems.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's life.
But yeah,
that is so exciting. Okay, so tell people some more things about, like, how can they follow you if they want to learn more about you?
Yeah.
What's up?
I am currently revamping my website. I feel like such a legit business owner because I actually hired a web designer to help me with this instead of just doing it myself.
I need to do that.
So Teal Hat Communications is where the major hub is. It will look very different in mid-July, which I'm so excited about. I am mostly on LinkedIn. So Casey Lynn Brown. So it's K-A-S-E-Y. I don't know why my middle name got in the URL, but it is. So it's K-A-S-E-Y-L-Y-N-N Brown, just like the color. I would love to connect with anybody. You can find my free mic check call on my website. I have a free newsletter, lots of stories, podcasting tips, marketing, strategic confetti examples. And yeah, that's primarily where I am. But Kindly Confident Marketing is my own podcast. So hang out with me there. Give plenty of feedback. Always open to that. I'm using this basically as one, my own marketing, but two, as a giant test and learn for my own clients, because this is like where I'm going to try stuff out. I'm trying a new hosting platform. You got me on this one. I'm trying Captivate this time.
There you go.
We're going to see how that goes. So I may need to pick your brain on that. But yeah, so that's
anytime.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so
thank
much,
you.
Casey. This has been so much fun. Now I, of course, have to jump off, and you do too. Kids, life, work, everything Renaissance person. But thank you, and we definitely will chat again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me today.
I'll see you.
Bye.
Connecting the dots with the Renaissance people.